Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 72 of the Hughes Sports Podcast. I am your host, of course, Jake Hughes, alongside the old man. Old man, how the hell are you doing tonight?
I'm good. I'm not paying attention, am I? I was on my phone. I was actually trying to share. I have to listen. I always have to listen to that opening because I like it so much. I just love what you've done with that. It's so cool.
But then you forget that you have things to do as co-host.
Well, yeah. And I'm like, oh, right. I'm supposed to be doing stuff, aren't I? Hate when that happens.
The worst. The worst. We got a very jam-packed show today, so I don't want to make anyone keep waiting as we have a very special guest.
So you're telling me to shut up?
Yeah, basically. You're rambling on a little bit too much. We have Harmon Dial joining us today. Harmon, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, and wow, that's the... Did you guys have that same intro last time? I don't remember that at all, but it's fire. I love it.
Thank you so much.
Jake did that up himself. He surprised me with one episode, probably 10, 15 episodes ago now, what was that?
No, very cool.
Thank you. So, we're a few weeks removed from the Canucks craziness. We were talking just before the show here. How does it feel now on the other side of the disappointment of losing in game 7 of round 2 for someone covering the team on a daily basis?
Yeah, I mean, as a reporter, I feel like I've lost the fandom. So it's not disappointing in the sense that, I was rooting for the team to win. But what I will say is, it was electric in the city in a way that I haven't seen since 2011 when this team started the run, especially when they beat Nashville. Just to see everybody, people who don't even follow hockey that closely, rally behind the team, the level of support was, again, something I haven't seen since 2011. And I'm not going to lie, after 2011... it had been a dark, dark decade. I had wondered if we could ever get back to the point where this city could be this in love with this team again. Just because I remember in the 2011 days, I mean, I was 10, 11 years old. It felt like everybody in your circle, whether they were hockey fans or not, knew who Luongo, Kessler, Sedins, Burrows were. And honestly, it was a little bit sad, like 2-3 years ago even, where unless somebody was a diehard fan of the Canucks, nobody knew who Elias Pettersson was. Nobody knew who Quinn Hughes was or JT Miller or Thatcher Demko. And I thought, maybe my generation, as we grow older, we've got so many other things going on that watching hockey isn't as much of a priority. But so many of my friends got back into the run, conversations with people at the dentist's office, literally everywhere we went. And so that was really cool to see. And that's why I'm hoping that the Canucks can sort of build off this momentum and prove that this run that they had to game 7 of round 2 wasn't just a fluke or a Cinderella run, because I really want to see that magic and that energy in the city continue building.
Yeah, Jake and I came down for game 1 of round 2. We flew into town for that one. I'm older than both of you, and 2011 was so exciting for me. And that's the energy I felt when we won that game and we had to walk from the stadium. It felt like 35 miles back to our hotel, but it was really just down Robson Street. But the electricity in the streets was just so much fun to see.
It's something that you can't put into words unless you are actually in the streets and you're actually talking to people on a daily basis. It was so special. And I think it was Rick Tocchet who said, like, this season was the one that Canucks fans fell back in love with their team or something around how they put respect back in the crest.
Yes.
This franchise needed a year like this one.
Definitely. Definitely.
Now, as we're heading into the offseason, watching the Oilers and Florida Panthers, what should the Canucks organization be learning from both of these teams?
Well, from the Oilers, it's difficult to really learn or draw a lot just because they have McDavid and Drysdale, right? And when you're building from that situation, it's not like they've been perfect in their roster construction. Yeah, Ken Holland deserves credit for the Zach Hyman signing. He deserves credit for the Matthias Ekholm trade, which I think has been massive in unlocking the best version of Evan Bouchard over the last 18 months or so.
Yes.
But I think Florida is a team that the Canucks can learn a lot more from, especially because you think about the spot that they were in when Bill Zito took the team over from Dale Talon. It was a spot pretty similar to where the Canucks were, where, yeah, the Panthers had some talented pieces with their core after years of drafting high. They had Barkov, they had Huberdeau, they had Ekblad, they had Uyghur at the time, but consistently underperformed, didn't have a strong enough supporting cast. Their pro scouting under Dale Talon was abysmal, and to see the way that Bill Zito has turned the Panthers around, people will point to the no state income tax thing and say, oh, that's an unfair advantage. And sure, there is an advantage with that. But I think what people overlook is what the Panthers have done to find project players and elevate them into the absolute best versions of themselves. They take players that are at a certain level, and by the time they're in the middle or at the end of their Panthers tenure, they're infinitely better players. And that's how you garner value. That's how you win trades. That's how you win signings. Yes. So the Sam Bennett, for example, he was a bottom six winger at the time. Now he's a high-end second-line center. You look at Gustav Forsling. He is a top 10, 15 defenseman in the NHL today. He was picked up off waivers. Even further down their defense, looking at Brandon Montour, he is now at the level where he provides top pair value on the second pair for the Panthers. He had 73 points last season, has been a huge part of their success this year. Well, he was a sort of reclamation project defenseman from Buffalo. Buffalo had been the first ones to try to rehabilitate Montour and turn him into top four defender. They couldn't do it. The Panthers could. Even to look at Carter Verhaeghe. Carter Verhaeghe didn't have any track record of NHL success prior to signing with the Panthers. Now he's a guy that can pop 40 goals for you, right? So even down the lineup, again, on their blue line, Nico Mikola was a third pair defender with the Blues, and even when he got to the Rangers, now he is somebody that can play defensive minutes on their second pair and is such a steady force. Even Oliver Ekman-Larsson, they pick him up after a buyout. He, in the early part of the season, plays such a pivotal role on the top pair when Montour and Ekblad are out with injuries. Then he's able to settle into a third pair role where he's been crushing it, right? So that's what the Canucks should be studying, is how and why are the Panthers extracting so much value out of these players that weren't as successful in other NHL organizations?
Well, and it's hopeful to see, because again, the Florida Panthers have been doing it the right way. They've taken their time. It's taken the Panthers years to get to this point. And hopefully the Canucks are looking at this the right way. And I think Rutherford, Alvin, they have a long-term plan for the organization. Coming into this offseason, there's a lot of holes on this team, but quite a bit of cap space. I think we're looking $26 million or so in cap space. What is the biggest need of this team?
To me, it's to find another high-end top six winger, especially one for yes. Elias Pettersson to play with. The Canucks only had one winger who scored more than 50 points this season in Brock Besser. That's not good enough to be a dynamic, explosive offense to genuinely go deep in the playoffs, because you're already kind of seeing it with Edmonton in this series so far. They run into an elite defensive team, right? And they played good defensive teams to get to the Stanley Cup final. They overcame LA, who defends well, Vancouver defends well, Dallas defends well. But the Panthers, statistically, especially with a lot of their proprietary analytics, are the best in the NHL at defending the slot and being a team that's difficult to generate offense against. You can't just rely on a few players to get the job done for you offensively. That's where, to me, you need to find more help on the wings. Elias Pettersson needs a star line mate, right? It feels like, you look, put it this way, it's crazy that they had to rely on Ilya Mikheyev as a running mate for Pettersson for as long as they did, because Mikheyev had one goal in his last 61 games combined between the regular season and playoffs. Like, that's it's almost hard to believe. How can you spend that much time with Elias Pettersson and only score one goal? And yet Rick Tocchet didn't have many other options that he could turn to, right? So to me, the top priority has to be finding another creative, dynamic top six forward, and hopefully somebody that can also help on the power play, because that was another area that I thought let this team down from the All-Star break right through to the second round of the playoffs.
Do you have something, old man?
You could tell I was going to say something.
Yep.
Is that? I always mess up his last name. Is it Neches?
Neches, yeah.
Neches. Is that the guy? Is that the fix? I know it's not going to be a one player fix, but will that give us what we need?
Yeah, he's a player, of course, that you should be kicking tires on. He is creative. He's dynamic. He loves rushing the puck up the ice. He's somebody that can create offense on his own, which sometimes with wingers, you have to play them with other elite talent, and they're so reliant on that elite player to do all the heavy lifting on that line, and they're more of, say, a complimentary finisher. And so, yes, Natchez, I fully believe that he'd fit well with Pettersson, but he'd also be somebody that can drive play on his own, and so there'd be less of a burden on Pettersson to do all the heavy lifting, whereas some top six wingers, yeah, they may be good scorers, but they're still going to be reliant on Pettersson to drive zone entries, to make passes into the slot, to be the one to draw the attention of opposing defenders. The other thing to keep in mind with Natchez is a lot of people will look at, okay, well, he had 71 points in 2022-23. Well, why did he drop to 53 points? You have to look at the deeper context. Number one, his power play time in Carolina fell by a minute per game. That's substantial. That's one of the reasons why Natchez isn't reportedly very happy in Carolina is, he feels he hasn't had enough opportunity. So right away you look at, all right, there was a dip in his power play opportunity. And number two, just look at the players that he spent, the line mates that he spent most of his time with this season. According to Natural Stat Trick, Jack Drury was up there. Jesperi Kotkaniemi was up there. It's not like he was playing with Sebastian Aho or with other talented high-end top six line mates. So if you put him in a better position to succeed, I really do believe that he is closer to being a 70-point player than he is a run-of-the-mill, 50-point, second-line type talent. Now, having said that, I do worry about the acquisition cost. Do the Canucks have the pieces to get that done? Would it require Hoglander as a centerpiece and something else on top of that? I doubt they'd have interest in Filip Hronek, to be totally honest with you, just because they're an organization that doesn't like to overpay players on long-term contracts, and that's what Hronek could end up being. The Canucks also don't have their first or second round pick this year, so if it's a futures-oriented deal, you'd have to be kicking it down to 2025. So that could be a complication, but absolutely, the Canucks should be kicking tires, and most importantly, there are other options on the market. There's going to be guys like Nick Ehlers, Pavel Buchnevich, on the free agent market, Jake Guentzel is obviously going to be the top target for a lot of teams. The Canucks have to find a way to land a big fish, in my opinion.
When do you think the deadline for the Natchez deal to be done? Is it pre-draft? Is it after the draft? Like, what does that time frame look like?
If I'm Carolina, I don't think there necessarily is a deadline to get it done.
Okay.
Of course, you don't want to drag it on too long, but if I'm Carolina, I would also look at, hey, if I'm going to potentially lose Jake Guentzel to free agency, can I afford to lose the scoring of both Guentzel and Natchez all in one season? Of course, Guentzel was at the deadline, so it's not like they had him for the entire season. It was only 25 games down the stretch and into the playoffs, but this is a Canes team that historically has had trouble scoring at an elite level for long stretches, especially in the postseason. So can they afford the double whammy of losing Guentzel and Natchez? So that's why if I'm in their shoes, I'm slow playing it. And I would be comfortable keeping it if I don't get the type of offer that really excites me.
Now, with Hronek, obviously, we've heard rumors of deals being offered and the money not being there and it being too pricey. Have you heard anything, or do you know of like any of the numbers that are out there? Are they realistic to what Hronik's looking for?
I don't know what the conversations look like behind the scenes, but I do think the Canucks are going to try their best to keep him. I really think they believe in the player. You don't go out 18 months ago or whatever it was and give up a first and a second round pick just to have him for one full season.
Yeah.
Right. This is especially given his age. He's 26 years old. At the time that the Canucks acquired him too, a team does its homework about, okay, what's his contract status? Yeah. We love him at $4.6 million now, but they'll have known that he was going to be an RFA with arbitration rights, with strong counting stats at the end of the season and in line for a significant raise. Now, could they have predicted that his number would be as high as $8 million potentially on a long-term deal? Maybe not to that extent, but for everybody saying, oh, it's been this year that's caused Hronik's stock to go through the roof, I'm not convinced about that, just because Hronik also played monster minutes in Detroit. Plus, in 2022-23, he scored 38 points in 60 games, which is essentially the same point per game clip that he had this season. It's not like he had this career high year that nobody could have predicted happening. They should have known that he would have been in line for a substantial raise. And I'm sure that to at least some extent, they would have baked that into the equation when they went out and traded for him in the first place. And secondly, I don't think he's as easy to replace as a lot of Canucks fans think. Now, of course, he faded down the stretch. He didn't have a great playoffs. There were, of course, also the reports by Dan Murphy that he was playing hurt. So you have to keep that in mind. Yeah. But also people will say, oh, go out and get Matt Roy or Chris Tanev in free agency. But this is the first year in a long time that NHL GMs have cap space to splurge. So are you telling me that the Canucks are going to give up on Hronek, deal him somewhere else, only to potentially overpay a guy who isn't as good as Hronek in free agency? Like, does that really make a lot of sense? Especially because in the regular season, statistically, you look at goals for and against for most of the season, Vancouver's top pair with Hughes and Hronek wasn't just one of the best in the NHL, it was number one.
Yeah.
So to me, with all those factors in mind, yeah, look, if you enter negotiations and the number ends up being crazy in a long-term deal, yeah, you do diligence, you float his name on the trade market, you see what opportunities are out there. But it's tough to truly entertain moving him unless you're certain that you have a great backup plan for who you're going to partner with Quinn Hughes and make sure that Hughes can continue playing at a Norris level and not drop off next season.
Yeah. Now you talked about this is the first season that kind of in probably what 4 years that the GMs actually have play money. The cap's going up $4.5 million or so. There's also the big wild card of Utah coming into the league and having $40 million of cap space and assets galore and an owner who, when he took over the Jazz, took them from a bottom half of the league in the NBA to a top half of the league, literally that next season. Can you see even more, I wouldn't say overpayment, but just bigger contracts than people are expecting due to that Utah factor and the increased salary?
I expect Utah to be aggressive. I'm not sure how drastically that's going to affect other teams' spending habits, but I really do think that the teams are going to go back to maybe not the same splurging recklessly to the same extent that we saw in for example 2016 when it was nightmare July 1 signing after nightmare July 1 signing, where Louis Erickson wasn't even the worst signing of that free agent class. He was just one of several. So maybe it doesn't go revert to that extent, but I do expect that there are going to be overpayments in free agency, especially because as a general manager, your incentives are aligned to garner immediate results so that you can keep your job, right? That's sort of the name of the game. You're not worried about how a contract is going to age in year four or year five, because you may not be around to see that through. At that point, it's somebody else's problem, right? It's almost like, if this works out, great. This is going to help the team take the next step. It's going to enhance my job security. If it doesn't work out, if it's a spectacular flop, well, guess what? I was probably going to lose my job anyway because I haven't improved my team and they missed the playoffs again. So that's, I think, why a lot of teams can become impulsive in free agency. And I, again, I'm not sure it's going to quite revert back to the 2016 days, but I do expect teams to be aggressive and for us to really raise our eyebrows at some of these contracts that are handed out compared to last year, for example, where there were actually a lot of reasonable deals.
Yeah. Now, we've taken up a lot of your time, and we appreciate you coming on the show, and your insights are always valuable. Up on The Athletic, you and Mr. Thomas Drantz put together the top 10 list of Canucks prospects, excluding Artur Seelofs, because I think that's almost a shoe-in to be back up for next year. Who on that list do you think is going to have a chance, or the best chance, of making the Canucks roster on opening day?
It's a really good question. I mean, everybody wants to know about Lekker Mäki, right? I'll point out he's still 19 years old, yeah. Right? He's one of the younger players of his draft class. I still think he needs time to marinate in Abbotsford. Sorry about that. I should have.
It's okay.
I don't know. I thought I had my phone silenced. Lekker Mäki, I think he needs more time. I would look at somebody like an Archie Baines, who is closer, further along in his development. And even though he didn't look NHL ready this past season, he's been a late bloomer. He's shown steady year over year progress. If he takes another step in the summer, I could absolutely see him settling into a depth role. Aturatu is a player that I look at, where if he has a big summer, could he make an impact on the wing as a dark horse? In more of a depth role, could Max Sasson be a spark plug, speedy, energetic centerman that fills in if the Canucks have some injuries, be the next man up after Nils Lehmann? Those are some of the guys that that come to mind, because again, Willander is going to go back for another year in the NCAA. And the other Elias Pettersson is still really young and raw, and I expect him to need some time in Abbotsford as well.
Amazing. Very cool.
I appreciate it. As we said before, we appreciate the time coming on, and picking your brain is always interesting because it gets my brain thinking of different things. So, thank you so much for being on the show, and I'm sure we'll catch up before the start of the next season.
That's it. Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Appreciate you, Harmon. Thank you so much.
If you guys want to continue to follow Harmon, you can do so at The Athletic. He writes there, as well as on Canucks Convo, hosted on the Nation Network. But yes, I'll get that swapped over, old man. Don't worry.
I was saying bye to Harmon. I was like, he waved and I went like this.
I thought you were pointing and I was like, what are you? Yeah, I'm doing my reads.
What a great guy, eh?
Yeah. Just a wealth of information that I have a fraction of, and I wish I could speak as eloquently and write as nicely as he does.
Well, and it's so cool because like you see him on TV now and I read him in the papers. Is The Athletic associated with the New York Times? Because it always comes up together.
Yes. So the New York Times bought The Athletic.
Oh, okay. So, and then let's face it, we're this little piddly ass show that gets 50 to 100 viewers every week.
And we appreciate that. If you like the show, share it with your friends. That's the best thing you can possibly do, is share it with your friends and be like, hey, look, these idiots had Harmon Dial on the show.
These idiots had Harmon effing Dial. Like, come on. And I love when we get a guest like that where you can ask them a question and literally they could talk for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And not be boring.
Like, if someone gave me a question, I would be good for probably about a minute.
Maybe two. If it was something I was really interested in.
I would be good for a minute. The second minute would be me trying to justify my interest for the first minute, and then everyone would start to tune out.
Exactly. That guy, he's so well-spoken. I don't know how old he is, but he's younger than us both, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Because he said he was 11 in 2011, so...
24.
Yeah. That was quick math. Someone that young to have that much... be that articulate,
yeah,
and have that much knowledge. Like, where does that come from? That's got to be a photographic memory. Like, he was just throwing numbers out, and it wasn't just dry facts,
no,
or dry stats that I hate. It was just
general knowledge.
Last year, this is what he did, and blah 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 blah. And I'm like, I literally had to keep my mouth shut because I was I'm in awe of someone that can talk. Obviously, I can talk well, and I can carry on a conversation well. I don't think I could talk for as long as he did on one topic.
Well, I think the difference is, and you said it there, we're having a conversation. And we're talking back and forth. There's feeding off each other. There's jokes and everything like that. I'm pretty sure you could give Harmon one question and a microphone and say, answer this and take 15 minutes, and he could entertain an audience of 3,000 people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And D, you nailed it. Passion. The kid has passion for the sport. Yeah. No doubt about it.
And like you said, he no longer watches as a fan. He watches as press and the media, and I'm sure it's a different aspect. But he was a fan, so he knows that passion that we have, that we are coming to you with.
I never want to lose that. And I hear that from Rod Peterson. I hear that from Darren. And now I hear it from Harmon. And actually, we heard it from Jeff as well when we were down. Matt Sakaris, thank you. When we were down in Vancouver. And he says it's hard now because... it's a business now, and the fandom has taken a sideline to the business.
Yeah.
I never want to be like that because I'm such a huge fan. I just love it.
And I think there's a difference because right now this is just a fan podcast. We make no money off of it. If anything, we lose money every single month by doing this podcast, which is fine.
We?
Yeah, I lose money too. You're the financial backer of this project, but I lose money too.
You're the talent. I'm the financial backer.
It's how you got the co-hosting job. I thought you knew this.
Oh.
The
pennies that cost us to do this every week.
Precise. Yeah. Just I don't know where I was going. I lost my train of thought completely.
That's okay, because I threw you a curveball.
We touch on it very briefly, but I do want to talk about it. Despite the fact that you're unsure if we care about the Stanley Cup Finals, I do. I think it's been a really fun series.
I have watched less than one game.
I watched almost all of Game 2 and half of Game 1.
The only reason I watched Game 2 was because I went to play poker down at Deerfoot Inn & Casino here in Calgary, and they obviously had it on with the sound. So you were kind of
drawn. They actually had the sound on.
Yeah, they actually had the sound on.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it was funny because I was sitting at a table, and there was a guy from Edmonton that was in town traveling, and I just bugged him the whole time. Like, literally drove him over the deep end. And it ended up, we went down to the final three, and it was me, him, and his buddy. And they were hammered. Like, they were hammered. and I still couldn't fucking beat them.
Online, there's been a lot of discourse about reffing controversies. There's no controversy. I'm sorry. There's not.
It's because, and it's funny because I was laughing with Ellison earlier this week, and I was like, Edmonton fans are hilarious. And it's really funny to sit back and not be a fan of either team. And so I don't give a flying patootoo. And patootoo, there's a new word. And watch people lose their mind. like lose their mind.
But that would be you.
Well, that's what my next comment was. It would be like, we would be the same way.
If 100%.
If it was the Canucks in there, you'd be the last person to be saying, oh, there's no controversy. Everything's now, just peachy.
No, you
would be screaming from the top of your lungs.
On which part?
Oh, the elbow.
The elbow was okay. I'll give you the elbow.
It should have been a 5-minute, in my opinion. Yeah, it was a hit to the head. Yes, I know it's game. We're in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and the rules seem to suddenly change and blah, blah, blah.
Did you see in the first period the knee-on-knee collision that they called a major?
I didn't see it live because I was driving down there. But I did see a replay, and I saw it live.
I saw it live, and I have Dom, I don't know if he's watching, was standing at my door watching the game with me, and I said, that's a knee-on-knee. That should be 5 in a game. Instantly.
Oh, really?
The fact that CB or Sportsnet, all of the people came on and said, oh, I don't think that should have been a game misconduct. I don't know what game they're watching, and they all need to take a step back and take off their oil or coated glasses.
Well, and then, I mean, there was a McDavid obvious dive. It was like he could have done a triple gainer with a half twist. And there was no penalty. So, yeah. I mean, it's really because I'm not a fan, I can look at it objectively.
Yeah.
And Rod, I can be a not, I don't have to be a
irrational fan.
Irrational fan. I can be a rational fan because I have no skin in the game. And I can say, you know what? It's not biased. It's not one way or the other. It's not Bettman trying to make sure a Canadian team doesn't win the cup. If I hear that one more time, I'm going to punch somebody in the throat. It's such a stupid comment.
Yep.
It's not real. It's as real as birds aren't real.
Birds aren't real. Birds are not real.
I was trying to think of a way to put that into this episode.
Birds aren't real. Birdsaren'treal.com. Go to birds aren't real. If you know, you know. Birdsaren'treal.com.
But there's no controversy. I mean, there's no conspiracy. Is there controversy? Of course there is. Because there's humans ref. The refs are humans.
Now,
and as humans, they're going to fuck up.
100%. There's zero refs out there, zero officials of any type in any sport that have a 100% accurate call and proper judgment at every single second of every single game. It's impossible.
Exactly.
Now, the one that you mentioned when we were chatting before was the puck over glass.
And that, I don't know, that picture you showed shows it way different than the angle I saw live.
100%. It's the reverse angle from ESPN. Sportsnet never showed it.
Right?
So I'm gonna bring up the picture here because I want people to see what we're talking about. If you are watching.
But it's all about angles at this point, is it not?
So, but if you can see the puck is clear from this angle because you're looking at it from an angle on where you would see the puck at the blue line and actually still be over the blue line.
Do you remember Calgary's non-called goal?
The goal that... No, that wasn't... When you say the Calgary non-call goal, people think of 2004. This is the one where clearly it didn't go in.
Yes.
But this is the same type of angle situation. If you pivot that camera, it is clearly out of the zone. And I've seen so much misinformation online that being like, well, the initial contact with the puck... Doesn't matter where the initial contact of the puck was.
It was when the puck leaves the stick?
Yes. So... This is
you have that I, rule?
Yes.
There it is.
Oh, 63.2 section 3. On any player who shoots or bats using his hand or stick, the puck directly out of the playing surface from his defending zone, except where there is no glass. The determining factor shall be the position of the puck when it was shot or batted by the offending player.
If you don't count it, the puck occurs while the puck is inside the defensive zone and subsequently goes out of play. If the contact with the puck occurs while the puck is inside the defending zone, I think that there should be the highlighted.
If contact with the puck occurs while the puck is inside the defending zone and subsequently goes out of play, the minor penalty shall be assessed. The shot doesn't count until the puck is off your stick.
Well, and that's where it's...
It's based off of the puck, not where his feet are.
But where? No, no. Of course, it's where the puck is. But is it where the puck? Where you? Where does the shot? What is it? The determining factor should be the position of the puck when it's shot. What do they call that? A shot when it touches the stick or when it leaves the stick?
When it leaves the stick, you. If you touch the puck with your stick, that's not a shot.
Okay, so I'm gonna. Yep. I'm going to go back to a high sticking call that we argued about, and I hit the puck, but I drag it down and it goes into the net, but it leaves my stick below my shoulders. I contacted above my shoulders, but it leaves my stick below the shoulders. What's the call?
You're not allowed to play the puck with a high stick. Therefore, it is and be the next player to touch it.
But you can't shoot the puck out of your own zone. So you touch the puck, and through it comes out of it's off the ice, and going. It's still on your stick, but it's off the ice.
So, but
the puck started on the ice inside the blue line.
So the difference in there is that. The illegal action isn't you putting the puck in from where the puck went in the net. The illegal action is the puck hitting the stick high and then being dragged down. That there causes the whistle to be blown.
But
where him playing the puck in his own zone, that's not against the rules.
But putting the puck into the crowd from your own play up from your own zone the is puck, against the rules.
The puck wasn't in the zone when he shot the puck.
But what's the shot? Is the shot from where the puck
from where the puck leaves the stick,
but it doesn't say that.
That I'm going. I don't have the official rule book. This is taken from the ESPN referee in charge, who used to be an NHL referee, and from Scouting the Refs, the podcast that I recommend all fans should listen to. If you are like me and the old man who get into semantic debates about rules, and I do because they clear things up like this.
See, I'm sure I would that like the to know what constitute when a shot is. Is it when the puck leaves your stick or when the puck makes contact? So if I guess offside is if I drag the puck behind me.
Yeah, as long as you have possession of it, yes, you're onside.
So, but then
you could be skating backwards as long as you have possession of that puck when you start to enter the zone. That is an onside play.
But then that's so the in that instance you're reversing what you're saying.
No, I'm not. You're it's
because
it's
you're there. Saying possession starts when you can connect with the puck.
But it's not about possession of the puck. That's the confusion. It doesn't matter where you start the possession of the puck. He shot it out once he was out of the zone. Doesn't matter where the shot starts.
This is one where ends. I'd love to get an explanation. And this is where going back to our conversation your first week back from. Was it your first week back from holidays where we talked? No, or maybe it was Reed. Somebody. We were talking about having officials do a press conference and actually have somebody explain this because where is it? Is it the contact where the puck makes contact first? Because how can you tell where that puck actually comes off the stick? You can't. You can't. There's no definition that you or no definite proof that that puck is still on touching his stick. From that angle, it's impossible to tell. Can you see the whole puck? Yeah. Is it on his stick? It's almost impossible to tell. Where did it leave the ice? I think that should be the telling part is where that puck leaves the ice. If the puck leaves the ice inside your own blue zone, behind your own blue line, that's a penalty.
So, player flips the puck up, bounces off your player's helmet, and goes out of bounds.
No, because it says in the rules, directly no deflection.
Deflection, fair, okay. No, right? that's fair. That's... So,
and that's I guess the controversy is what's the rule? Is the rule when the puck leaves the ice? Because the puck left the ice inside his blue line. It was
but
obvious.
It's not. The wording of it is from the shot. By my definition of the shot and the from the referees that have chimed in on it, the two that were on Twitter, a shot is when the puck leaves the stick, not the initial possession point.
But if you show me that picture again, fire that picture back up.
I'll need a second here because I started Googling if there was a definition of what a shot was.
Yeah, I figured that's what you were doing. Do, 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 do. See, now you can't tell, is that, has he already flipped it?
Clearly not, because the puck's still on his stick.
Well, you can't tell if the puck's on his stick from that angle. That puck could have left his stick and be on the trajectory up. You can't tell from that angle. It's a still shot.
It's a still shot, but from the still shot, it looks like the puck is still right up against the stick.
Say those words again. It
appears to be. And if you don't know, you can't call it.
And this would be where I say, you want to stop all the confusion?
These conversations?
Go upstairs. Just have a quick review.
But
then it would have taken a few minutes.
It would have taken a few seconds. Because if that's the ruling, is that a shot is from the point of the puck leaving the stick, then it would have been, no, you made the right call. Okay, bye. Click.
Yes, but they didn't. Now Edmonton fans have every right to be upset about it. Just like if it was you and I, we'd be, don't lie, if that was you and I,
100%.
We would have been losing our left and right nut.
However.
And freaking Ellison and D out. They both would have held hands and left. And we would have been left alone, homeless.
But, well, you would have been homeless. I would have been fine. But this comes out. I find scouting the refs post that we still have this conversation, I think. I still think that based off of the definition, even though at the time of the game, 100%, I'm irrational. What the fuck are you doing, refs?
Yeah.
After that comes out, it's like, okay, clearly that's the call. That's the way that the refs interpret the rule.
But we didn't hear from the refs. We heard from...
Well, we heard from ESPN.
We heard from podcasters.
No, we heard from the official rule analysis who used to be an NHL official for ESPN.
Used to be, I mean, they could put him on TV and call him an analyst. You know what I mean? What we need to do is hear from the NHL on why that call was made,
but
and who made the call and why he made that call.
No, you do not need to. You do not need to say who made the call. You already know the refs on the ice. Yeah.
But we need to know the interpretation. We need to know, like, and if that would have been talked about that night,
this isn't a story.
Exactly. Look over. Yes, look at the chat.
Correct.
She's never wrong.
Don't tell her that.
Hold it. No, just don't even try to go. Done.
Fans can have their point of view. And as we just talked about, fans can be wrong. Is there anything else you want to talk about in the world of the CFL NHL?
Can it just end? It's June 12th. My God.
Yeah, it's just dragging.
Only because we're out. Yes, we're bitter.
No, even compared, like, I keep seeing these messages being like, this year, like, so many years ago, St. Louis won a cup. So many years ago, last year, Vegas won a cup. And it's like, we're in game two.
Just for the record, Monday.
Yep.
Guess what the anniversary Monday was?
Game seven.
Nope. Game five. It was the infamous pitcher.
Game
five.
Is that the actual 1 year anniversary?
Well,
or is that the?
No, that was the actual post.
Was on the 17th.
Yeah. Huh?
Would you say on the 17th?
No, on Monday.
Yeah, that's the 17th. Oh, this past Monday.
It just came up on my Facebook on Monday.
So yeah, let's put that in perspective. 13 years ago, we were on game five. Today would have been game six.
But we're a week behind?
Almost two?
A week.
With the scheduling of everything, we probably wouldn't have played game six today. It would have been game six tomorrow because I believe they gave us an extra day of rest. But
yeah,
and we're going to game three. That's a week's difference.
I don't remember us taking a week off between the Western Conference Final and the Stanley Cup. I believe it was quick. Now, it could be my, it could be I'm wrong.
That, to be fair, that entire run feels 13 years, 13 years ago feels like a minute.
And we might have had a few beverages during those games.
Speaking of a few beverages during games, CFL season kicked off this past weekend. I don't know why you're looking victorious, but let's go through the games this past week. Because we started it off with a rematch of the Grey Cup. You seem very confused.
Well, I just looked at your thing. Never mind. I have to ask you. You'll explain it, I'm sure.
Yep.
So it starts off
With the Alouettes taking on the Blue Bombers. And just like the Grey Cup, we had the Alouettes finishing on top.
Can I, like, and it was funny because somebody else brought it up and I didn't. I was listening to something and they brought it up and they went, why was that game in Winnipeg? Didn't the Alouettes win the cup?
Yep.
Doesn't the winning team usually have their home first game at home?
Who knows? Because last year there wasn't a Grey Cup rematch to start.
Yeah. In the past, I'm going way back when I was a young fella, it was always a rematch of the Grey Cup. Played
team.
At home. That's just the way it was.
But I also get the TSN and CFL's want to have your first game at the first game of the season. You want to make it appear as big of an event as possible. And unless you're putting BC in that event with
the home game,
no, because you would have complained, why aren't they doing a Grey Cup rematch? You want it to be in Winnipeg because that's where the bigger party is going to be.
Yes, of course. They're going to get a bigger crowd. Yeah. Why are CFL fans so obsessed with crowd size? No other sport. I can't think of another sport where
I do. Which? I know one other sport that we follow.
Wrestling.
See,
that's
only
that's an entertainment.
Sports entertainment.
What? I don't understand the absolute obsession with having to know each and every game's attendance. Just shut up and enjoy the game.
Well, because
I rant.
Okay, so then any thoughts on the Alouettes and the Blue Bombers?
It's only the first week. To say the Bombers are in trouble, oh my god, the sky is falling, the dynasty is over. The dynasty never happened. It's 1 week. Everybody's got to remember Montreal won the Grey Cup to begin with. It wasn't a fluke. If you look at their record in the second half of last season, they ran together, I think, six straight going into the playoffs.
Yeah.
And they're just continuing. They put something together that's special out in Montreal. Fajardo is lighting it up. And
you got to give credit where credit's due. One Rod Peterson never gave up on Cody Fajardo.
Yes.
Death, taxes and Cody Fajardo.
Exactly. Right. No, he's Montreal's a good team.
Yep.
Everybody's like, oh, the East is so weak.
They won more games than the West did.
Toronto won 16 games last year. That's more than anybody in the West.
Yep.
Hello.
And this week it was an even 50-50 split. My biggest concern for the Blue Bombers is coming into this next week without Lawler.
Yeah.
Who's out, and Oliveira has not been practicing.
Oh, really? Oh, that could hurt.
Two of their bigger threats could be out in taking on the Ottawa Redblacks.
But their kicker whined enough, and they took the chip out of the ball because, you know, that's why he missed all those kicks. I'm not saying it's not true. I've heard from other kickers who have said it does definitely affect only in a field goal application. It only affects the ball because you're doing with a field goal, your ball's going
over end.
With a punt, your ball's spiraling and it doesn't affect it the same way.
However, I did notice there was a couple punts that had some really wonky, not just hang time, but the off of the foot, it looked awkward.
All I can say is, kid, you better make every single kick in your next game, or you were going to be the roast of the CFL.
Now, in all fairness to him, when the NHL put the chips in the pucks the first year it happened, it was the exact same complaint. You can't shoot the puck properly. So I'm sure it throws things off.
Well, I meant to bring my football up so I could show you. They don't put the ball, they don't put the chip inside. What they've done is where the laces are, they've put it in underneath the laces.
So if you're not expecting that, because I don't think it was announced until just before the season started.
Well, there's no way to adjust for it either.
There is a way to adjust for it. Once you get a few kicks with it, you're going to be used to it.
I don't know. I mean, if you've been kicking for your whole career, because now kicking is a literal specialty.
Yep. Well, that's not always
to a degree.
Yep.
You're not going to change your style that much. I think taking it out is the right move. I love that the CFL stepped in after game one
and made
that decision right away. Good call. I don't give them a lot of credit, but I'll give them credit for that.
Yep. Then we move on to the Hamilton Tiger Cats taking on the Calgary Stampeders. And talking about field goals, until like the fourth quarter, this was basically just a field goal fest.
Yes. Paredes. Wow.
Yep.
Like, just wow. There was a 52-yarder that he kicked. I swear it could have gone 65 or more. It had the height. And it almost cleared the end zone.
Yeah. It was impressive.
How deep is our end zone? 10 yards?
20, 15?
Whatever it is. So
it's 20, I think.
No, I don't think it's that deep.
15.
I don't think it's that deep.
The NFL's is 10 yards. Ours is 15. Yeah.
And it didn't clear it, but it almost cleared it. Another
10 yards to that. That's a 62-yarder.
Yeah, it's insane. Insane. And he went 6 for 6.
No, he did have the wind at his back during that kick.
Yeah.
And they were talking, the on-field reporters were talking about it during the game, that there wasn't much of a wind up in where the flags were.
Yeah.
But down there was gusts of wind that were, because we and know being that, at McMahon.
In that stadium, I mean, we used to sit low and you would feel like you'd be looking at the flags going, has that flag waited? Because I'm being blown over here.
Yeah. So, right? But Levi.
Calgary came out.
Yep.
They didn't make any changes.
Nope.
Really? Very few. They made some. I shouldn't say they made no changes. They didn't make the changes you and I thought they were going to. We thought they were going to go out and find a quarterback. Coach Dickey has stuck with them, and Jake Mayer is his man, come hell or high water. And was he awesome? No.
Was he good enough?
He won the game. Out of the two quarterbacks, which one did I like watching? Which one impressed me the most? You're going to be shocked when I say this, but Bo Levi.
I 100% agree.
He ran. He actually ran, folks. Like, he used those things God gave him.
And not just that, but he made contact with people.
And he ran for lots of yards. Like, he was the second leading rusher, I believe it was, or third leading rusher. Like, I was like, what the hell is Bo doing? It was insane. I think the CFL better watch out. If Bo stays healthy and gets his swagger back, which is his confidence, he could light this up again.
Yeah.
Right. But Calgary won all, and I'm not trying to take anything away from Calgary's win. They battled for it and they deserve the win. So good on them. You're looking up road stats?
36 yards in 3 runs.
Yeah. I mean, that's a first down every run.
12 yards per run.
Yeah. Right. It's like, holy.
So, no, I was actually very impressed with both teams, but then I also had to put on the perspective, and I'd message you about this or talked about it with you afterwards, is did both those teams look good because they were playing each other, or were they both good teams? And it's hard to know because it's this early in the season.
It's one game. Like, let's not get excited.
And talking about that, let's move to Saturday's game, because this is the exact same conversation you can have, is the Rough Riders and the Elks. Both teams looked good.
Yeah, Elks. I'll be honest, I didn't watch the game live. I had other things happening.
During the game, I was actually at McMahon doing other officiating duties.
I watched the highlights of it. And once again, the Elks found a way to lose. They really did. They were up. Yep. They had this game in hand going into the fourth quarter and gave it away.
21 points in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
That's literally all the points Edmonton scored. They gave up in the fourth quarter to the Riders.
How did we end up two absolute diehard Lion fan, and we're both, our girlfriends are Stamps fans?
We don't know how that happens.
I don't know.
Living in Calgary really kind of throws things for a loop in that aspect.
Yeah, I guess so. We'll have to teach them better. We got to send them back to training.
We already got D on Team Canucks.
That's true.
Baby steps.
It's been 12 years and I haven't been able to get Ellison on that.
No.
He does wear a Lions jersey every once in a while, though.
That is true.
Yeah, that is true. Tis true. Which takes us to Sunday's game.
Sunday's game we actually ended up watching together.
Yes. BC.
The Argonauts and the Lions.
Used to call that the Bailey Bowl.
Not no more. Bailey doesn't own either team anymore, does he?
No. No, because Toronto Sports Corporation owns the Argonauts.
Did MLSE buy them?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so...
The Lions played one quarter. Really?
Yeah. I guess when you look at it, and I said it after the game to you, you can't turn the ball over four times and let your quarterback be sacked six times and expect to win a game. It's 100%. Not going to happen, right?
No. And I don't blame Vernon Adams for any of the turnovers.
Look up Vernon's stats.
25 for 33, 363 yards, two touchdowns, and threw one interception, which I might add was not his fault, because he threw it to the guy who bopped it up in the air, and it, like any good DB, the guy juggled it a little bit but still caught it, because if he could catch the ball, he'd play receiver.
Exactly. What's the problem in BC? Obviously, we cover the whole entire CFL. We talk about all the teams. I focus on my team.
What is the biggest issue for the BC Lions this year?
Same thing as it was last year. It's the offensive line. It's the ends. We needed to go out and get an end, and we didn't do it. You look at every sack. I went back and I watched the highlights of every sack, and they didn't come up the middle. Not once.
They went around.
Not once. And it was, went around. Will it be addressed? I know when we got our offensive line coach last year, he made them change their stance just a little. Do you remember? Was that last year or the year before?
I don't remember, to be completely honest. I remember the story.
Maybe he has to go back and get him to do it again, because gosh dang it. Now, we were playing a determined Argos team. They got a lot of drama happening over in Toronto.
What?
They're playing second fiddle. They'll always play second fiddle in sports, third fiddle, fourth fiddle, maybe even. I would drop them down.
I would say fourth.
Because you got...
You got the Raptors. I'd put them fifth.
Because you got the Blue Jays, the Raptors, you got the Leafs.
Maple Leafs, you got TFC.
Yeah.
Who actually, on average, draws more attendance than the Argos do.
So
and then you've got the Argos.
Literally, and then have put in the controversy that they went through that we're not going to get into again, because we've talked about it till the cows came home. Yep.
Now,
they were determined.
They were. And there's the also the question.
Lions didn't answer the freaking bell. They
they woke up in the second quarter. They scored 20 points in the second quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And then thought, oh, we've got the lead. It's Toronto without Chad Kelly. We can win this. Does this show how good of a team Toronto is that everyone can just, oh, Toronto's just, they only have Chad Kelly. Dukes did not play that well. Dukes played good. He did not play great.
No, he only had 200 and some odd yards.
But it was enough to get the win.
Huh?
But it was enough to get the win.
It was enough to get the win. He's going to be, because he's built for the CFL. Let's face it. He's built. He's quick.
He's about 4 inches too short to be a starter in the CFL or in the NFL.
Exactly. And he's got legs. And that's what you want. And he's got a freaking rocket and a half as an arm. So give this kid an opportunity. He's going to be a superstar. He's got 8 games to prove it. Right.
Well, and it really shows, like, yes, Kelly will be missed.
Yeah.
But they have enough stopgaps that they can make this work.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think they're going to miss Kelly. I don't think Kelly's coming back this year. I think he's done his career. To be honest, he has to go through so many things before he's allowed to come back. And he hasn't admitted there's an issue until he admits there's an issue and wants to get help. He's not going to get help.
Nope.
I hope he does. Because I'd like to see him come back, and I love watching a good quarterback throw a CFL ball. So you never know.
You never know. But until that happens, I don't think there's much reason to talk about Kelly anymore.
No, exactly. I agree. Carry on.
How do my power rankings look now? Well, they look pretty okay. Have you turned your back?
I'm not talking to you.
Why? Because my power rankings were quite accurate? Well, this week, let's take a look.
Come on, that was funny.
I had planned
that from 2 o'clock this afternoon, dude.
I'm proud. You know what? I'm proud of you that you found a bit and you stuck with it. In ninth place, the only team that did not play, the Ottawa Redblacks.
Yeah, that's fair.
I had them ninth last week. I can't move them up. I can't move them down. They're ninth. In eighth place, we have the Hamilton Tiger Cats. They lost to a team who I have in the bottom half of the power rankings.
Yeah, I agree.
Edmonton Elks. Exact same thing. I had the Elks higher and the Stampeders higher. Both of those teams beat these two teams. Therefore, these two drop down to make way for sixth place, the Calgary Stampeders. Fifth place, we have the Saskatchewan Roughriders. These two are, if I could have them both tied at five, and I guess I really could. It's my own power rankings. I can do whatever.
Yeah, you could go 5 and 5.5, right? Yeah.
Or I could go 6 and 6 and 6.
Yeah, exactly. No, I agree.
In fourth place, we have our beloved BC Lions.
How can you have a team that hasn't won above a team that's two teams that won?
Because Saskatchewan Calgary. No. There's logic behind this, good sir.
Oh, okay.
The Riders and Stampeders both lost to teams that I had ranked below BC to start the season. BC lost to the team that I had in third place to start the season.
Okay.
Therefore, you can, until the Lions prove to me definitively, or the Riders and Stampeders prove definitively that they're better than the Lions therefore hold their spot at four.
Okay. We'll give you that.
Moving down to the third place team, another loser this week, but they lost to the team that's at the top of the standings.
Yep.
And the top of the power rankings. And that gave away. Number two, we have the Toronto Argonauts, and number one, the Montreal Alouettes.
I'll give you them. I don't disagree with any of your picks.
Wow. I think that's a first. I think that's a first time ever that you haven't had major issues with my power rankings.
I literally can't argue with one of them.
I can't. Mark this day on the calendar.
It's
mainly good. Because the old man is 0-1 in his weekly predictions.
What's this 0-1 shit? I went 2-2.
I'll explain in a second.
Fucking hell.
In my favorite segment of the week, shit. Old Man Predicts.
This is...
It's time for the Old Man Predictions. How well did he do? Do-do-da, do-dee-do.
I want an official review.
Right, ladies and gentlemen. Old Man Predicts. You can see down below, Old Man, you are officially 2-2.
Throwing a flag.
You are officially 2-2 on the year. However, partway through the NHL season, we wanted to know how many weeks did you actually predict correct? And we couldn't find those numbers. So I said, don't worry. When we start anew in the CFL season, I will be your source of truth because the people demand to know how the chosen one knows. How correct he is.
This 0-1 bullshit.
You are 2-2. You have 2 corrects, 2 losses. However, your overall weeks are 0-1.
You know how hard it is to be nice cut? I don't get it. Do you know how hard it is to predict all 4 games correctly?
I believe the nice cut was due to the fact that you were about to swear and we cut to the bumper.
Well, I did that on purpose.
Don't tell people that.
Sorry, okay. Sorry.
Don't be talking about the sausage. Can't be talking about what goes in the sausage. You just give them the sausage.
What the hell are you talking about?
The podcast is like a sausage, right? You present it to people. There's all sorts of weird goopiness in there. We don't talk about it, but people like eating the sausage. They put it in their mouth. We don't talk about what's in the sausage and how it gets in there. They just put it in their mouth.
Okay, this is you. This should be you. Wow.
Week 2 starts tomorrow at 4:30 Pacific time.
Sausage?
With the Winnipeg Blue Bombers heading into the Ottawa Red Blacks.
Easy pick, Winnipeg.
I really want Drew Brown to prove that he was better than the Winnipeg team himself. I want it to happen. I don't think it will happen.
Are you actually taking the Red Blacks?
No, I don't make predictions here. Going into Friday, we have the Montreal Alouettes heading into Edmonton to take on the Elks.
Sorry, folks.
I don't know what's so funny. What's so funny. We're not talking about it.
Don't talk about the sausage. Montreal.
I think that's the pick. And then going in to Saturday, the big game, 4 p.m. start in BC. And contrary to certain articles on 3 Down Nation, I've already, not even a joke, emailed them to let them know that they screwed up. It is an opening day or opening concert from 50 Cent, not a halftime concert from 50 Cent.
Thank you.
There's been multiple confusing reports on this. It is an opening concert. On the website, it's opening before kickoff concert.
They will probably start at 2 o'clock, I would think, maybe 2:30. I'm not sure what time the concert starts.
I don't know what time the concert starts either, but the game itself starts at 4 p.m. Pacific time, taking on the Stampeders. 53,000 plus fans in attendance.
So excited to see this one. Are you coming out for this one? Yeah, you're coming out. We're doing dinner and we're going to party. Remember? It was a 50 Cent party. Don't tell me no. I got it all planned.
Is everything going to cost 50 cents? Because then I'm in.
Exactly.
At the rate of inflation, I'm in.
I'm obviously taking the Lions. Yeah. I cannot not take my Lions, but I think that's an easy bet as well. Take it to the bank.
And then we have Sunday, The Saskatchewan Roughriders taking on the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Now, this is a contest that I'm actually really excited for. I think the game of the week, clearly, as BC Lions fans, and with all the big hoo-fla-fla for the home opener.
The what?
The hoo-fla-fla.
Hoo-fla-fla.
For the home opener, the Stampeders and Lions should be the game of the week for the CFL, and that's why it's on the Saturday. There's a reason they do things, folks. But I think the Rough Riders Ticats will really put into perspective the pecking order of these teams.
Yes, I think you know what this one is? Do you know what it is?
Ooh, are we getting our first?
This one.
Do you want, I can click it on. I can click it on.
I can't find it.
I have it here. I have it here. Don't worry.
This one is a coin toss.
I still can't believe I made that while we were on the air.
On my pick'em, I've taken the Riders, but I could see either one. So this is going to be a tough one. I'll stick with my rider with the Riders. But if Bo comes out and is as hot as he looked and as good as the confidence he had, this could go the other way, because if you go back to that game and you look, there was probably three passes that their receivers totally just messed up.
There's a handful, like literally there's one that it hit him in square in the hands and he let it through.
Yes.
You can't be doing that, especially when you've got someone like Bo who you're trying to get his confidence back.
Well, exactly. Right? I'll take the Riders on this one.
Going into week two, the old man has predicted the Bombers, the Alouettes, the Lions, and the Riders.
Let's go, Riders.
After that, you need to wash your mouth out. But we have taken enough of your time out here. The old man's choking on the dirty green Riders. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram at HSP_pod. You can follow me personally at JEHStreams. That's J Streams. You can follow the old man at OldManHSP on Twitter. Do you have anything else you want to plug there, old man?
Yes, I do. I want to plug. As most of you know, I have made a career move months ago, and I am now working with Rangeland RV. And if you are interested in getting an RV, and you're looking this year, now is the time. Till June 28th, our normal interest rates is 8.99. We are clearing out all our 2023 stock. They all went on sale. Not only did we reduce the prices on them, we've lowered our interest rate to 2.99%. If you're in the market for an RV, PM me. I'll give you all the details on that. rangelandrv.ca or .com. That's the place to go.
I will also put in the description of the YouTube video, if you're watching this after the fact, or in the podcast description, a link right to the old man's Twitter, so you can DM him directly.
Yes.
You can also DM the show on Facebook. You can DM us on Twitter. We'll be able to get you in contact with the old man to get you a brand new RV trailer. What's that thing? What's the thing I'm thinking of? The little thing that goes pop-up tent. Called a pop-up tent because it goes pop. I figured it out, folks. We got
it's
words.
It's called a tent trailer, but that's okay.
See, I don't even know what I'm talking about. But you know what I do know? You do know what I do know.
What do you know?
I know that you know that I know that next week we'll be right back here with a brand new episode of the Hugh Sports Podcast. Have yourselves a wonderful week. Mwah.